Okay, we're going to bring the Senate Finance meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, February 5th, and with this is Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Senator Fairclough. And Senator Kelly, I think, is at the health fair, so he'll be here shortly. So today we are to continue our discussion on education. We're going to take up a couple education bills, Senate Bill 82, which is the broadband discounts for schools, Senate Bill 111, repeal the secondary school exit exam. And with that, is there anything to bring before the committee before we get started? Okay. So Senator Olson, I believe this is your bill, Senate Bill 82. We'll start with that one.
Yes, it is, sir.
Okay. Since it's your bill, Senator Olson, I'll give you the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I'd like to have my Chief of Staff, Dave Scott, come on up to the table.
Of course. Welcome, okay. David.
Senate Bill 82 has to do with the broadband and related to discounts to the schools. It affects all schools throughout the state of Alaska, has a positive impact on it, and with that, for the details, I'll have David Scott, my Chief of Staff, go ahead and give you the details of Senate Bill 82.
David? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Scott, staff of Senator Olson. Senate Bill 82, the bill before the committee today, is the intent of the bill and intent of the sponsor is to have the state pick up the local share of the broadband that is not covered under the E-rate program. At the highest level, that's what this bill is about. The E-rate program is a federal program, and that provides from the Universal Service Fund, provides a discount to schools, to and other libraries, things of that nature. Every school district in the state will benefit from this. There's a spreadsheet from the Department of Education that every member should have in their folder, and you can look. We have, you know, from Acres, Fairbanks, Juneau, Kenai Peninsula, Matsu, you'll see this. That all the way to Volusians East and Chatham Strait, those school districts. If you look on the back page, on the last page, page 5, you get down to the totals, you'll see that there's $9,180,000 that is paid by a local, it's the, you know, the applicant share is what it's called, but that's the local contribution to this. And you'll see that the E-rate program through the Universal Savings Fund, the state gets roughly $4 for every $1 that we put in. The sponsor feels, you know, we are always requiring schools to do a better job, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that we're always trying to make a more perfect system out of our education system, and it's time to assist our school districts by leveraging even more federal funding, and to expand educational opportunities to districts that don't have every opportunity, mostly rural districts, but every district will benefit from this. The to get to the mechanics of the bill really quickly, there's only two sections. In the first section, you'll notice that A, where subsection A of section 1, is where the universal services will pay what's called the applicant share. If you look to B, this is where we have a cap and a floor. So B1 is the cap, and B2 is the floor. If you look at the floor, it's where we set that every school district would get at a minimum, will have 10 megabits of download services. If you look at the fiscal note that is attached, you'll see that there are roughly 500 schools in Alaska, and 170 of those are below the 10 megabits. I just think it's important to note one more time is, you know, the increased broadband is necessary to assist in distance delivery courses and new online assessments that are coming through the state. You'll see that One more point about those 170 schools. To bring those up to the 10 megabits, to bring them up to the floor, Department of Education is estimating it will cost $7.3 million. I wanted to get that on the record. The sponsor just feels that, you know, the benefits of using technology and the internet will only expand the educational opportunities for all students across the state. And with Mr. Chairman, we have some folks from Department of Education here to answer any technical questions, specifically on the E-rate and on the E-rate program and the Universal Service Funds. It's quite detailed, and we, for the community to drill down into that, we have assistance here. There's also several folks from school districts who'd like to testify, and I'm available for any questions from the community.
Questions? Senator Perkoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Scott, my understanding, and I know the administration can probably speak to this better, is that we've done a broadband with study, so I'm not, to my knowledge, in receipt of that yet, or at least a high-level overview of the potential needs in different areas of Alaska. And so my question is, if we've done the study, how do the numbers compare that you're proposing with the actual ability of usage of bandwidth in those communities currently and the need of the bandwidth in those communities? That's the first question. And the second question is, who are we buying this bandwidth from? Because my understanding is, at least when we talked to the railroad, that we had a company that came in and basically bought all the bandwidth in all of the states, and now all of us are having to go through a particular entity to buy bandwidth. That the federal—I don't know that it's true. The federal government sold it to a company, and now everyone's being forced through, and it's costing states as well as municipalities additional money for purchasing bandwidth.
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, those are good questions that drill down into the E-rate program and the Universal Service Fund that I'd be much more comfortable having Mrs. Linda Thibodeau, I believe was her name. And I just don't want to waste the committee's time by trying to speculate.
Okay, additional questions? Mr. Scott, has the state contributed to this program in the past?
Mr. Chairman, the funds, in my understanding, the funds are the federal funds. They pass through and they're dispersed to the school districts, and then the school districts themselves pick up the what's called the applicant share in the bill. So, to my knowledge, the state hasn't picked up the intent of the bill is for they have the state to pick up the applicant share, the district's costs. And to my knowledge, the state has never. I'm not saying the state hasn't invested in broadband, perhaps, or helped school districts out in that way. I will say that the intent of the bill is for the state to pick up the school district's share.
Okay.
Of their internet services.
Okay.
That is not provided by the E-rate program.
And maybe we'll hear from some of the school districts. Well, I guess if they can get the state to pick it up, they like that. Is this a request of theirs, or is just?
Mr. Chairman, not every single one, but there are school districts that have approached, yes.
Okay. So does this count towards our BSA if we did something like this? No, don't answer that. Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, the funds that would be dedicated to this approach, would they be dedicated and self-contained and focused just on internet service, or is this money that would go into the school district and they could choose to use it in other areas?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the E-rate program limits the money to telecommunication services, internet access, and internal connections. So it has to be contained to those functions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. And again, this may be an unfair question, but whenever we do federal programs or federal match. Obviously, the concern is, will the federal contribution go away? Any concern about that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. The E-rate program was not subject to sequestration, for instance, and the Universal Services Fund is paid through by everyone who has a phone. If you have a cell phone, there's going to be a little line item on your bill that says Universal Services. If you have a phone at home, it's Universal Services. If you have an internet activity at home, it's Universal Services. And so the fund is paid through, it's collected through, I don't want to use business names, but it's connected through internet providers and telephone providers. And so, and it's not subject to sequestration, but then again, it's the federal government. You know, you can't guarantee anything other than gridlock, I guess. Yeah. Sure. We should be skeptical, of course. Sure. We're Alaskans.
Yeah, no guarantees.
Yeah, no guarantees.
Okay, Senator Dunlap.
Chair, just on the second page of the bill, the effective date. Is it July 1st, 2013?
Mr. Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, the bill was drafted last year, and so if it does go past, we will have to do a CS or amend it here in a couple different areas.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, if and when the bill moves, we'll make that change. Yeah. Okay. Senator Faircuff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Scott, I'm looking at your sponsor statement, and it's where you're talking about the minimum floor that you pointed to in the bill, and I'm wondering when you set a minimum floor of a particular quantity of megabits a second, if how that is driving the actual cost of providing the broadband. And if you're doing it for the district in this language, does that trickle down to each individual schools, and is the infrastructure then cost reflected actually in the bill that we have before us?
Through the Chair, Senator Farkoff, to try to answer that is in the way I read the E-rate program requirements, I guess, is that they have internet connections, and so that's some to me that's infrastructure, I guess, is what you're getting at, and the state has assumed that it will cost $7.3 million to get those 170 schools up to 10 megabits per second. 10 megabits, I don't know if it's per second or not. And they will then, because of bill in section in B1, they will be limited. They will meet the floor, and they will be limited by a cap. That cap is the 10% of a previous year. And so I don't know if that helps answer your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll hold.
Okay. I think this has got potential as far as advancing the distance learning program
delivery.
Yeah. So. But that'll be a question we'll ask the administration. And I'm sure there's options here that where maybe we could still get the municipality or the school district to pay some, and the state pay some, and the feds pay the rest. So, okay. To help reduce that fiscal note a little bit. All right, anything else for Mr. Scott?
One last comment.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Chairman, has to do with, it's not just going to help distance delivery, it's just going to help internet in general. Within the schools that are out there, the individual schools, how it's going to trickle down, I don't have all those details worked out, and I don't think that the program has them worked out, but it certainly would be a help to all school districts throughout the state of Alaska, whether you're a large municipality like Anchorage School District or whether you're one of the smaller ones out in rural Alaska. And that's why I'm a sponsor of this bill.
Excellent. Well, appreciate you bringing the bill forward, Senator Olson. Okay, well, if there's no additional questions, let's I believe we have somebody from the administration here. Eddie? Oh, no, that's in your past life, right? Okay. Les, is that right? Who's here? Oh, okay. Linda. Okay, sorry. You could put your name on the record for us, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Linda Thibodeau. I'm the director of the Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums. And I will do my best to answer the questions. I also hope that Valerie Oliver, who is our E-rate specialist, is on the phone, and she may be able to answer those. And I might need to defer to her quite a bit.
Yes, Valerie is on the phone.
Okay.
So, if you want to get a helpline there, we can grab her as well.
Thank you.
Who else?
I am on the line. This is Valerie.
Okay, Valerie. All right. Well, let's just. If you can just hang on with us here, and we're going to hear from Ms. Thibodeau, and then we'll go to you next, Valerie. Okay, so the floor is yours, please.
Well, thank you, Chair Meyer. I'm really not here to testify. I'm more here to just answer the questions that we can, so that this bill is more understandable, and the fiscal note and the requirements of E-rate are understandable to you.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Thibodeau, as we look at some of the questions that Senator Fairclough answered, is it indeed true that a company has bought a major portion of the broadband width that's there and that we have to go ahead and subscribe to that provider or to that company in order to get coverage for those schools out there?
That is not the case that I am aware of at all. I think he may be referring to something else, but we have a pretty robust competition in the state of Alaska right now with GCI, ACS, AT&T, DRS, and some of our local providers as well, offering competition and pricing. We do not have a one service provider fits all in our state. Some providers are better suited for some areas and some for others, and we really do have quite a bit of competition and industry going on here. There is no monopoly.
And through the chair, if I may, to sure. Senator Olson, the E-rate program also requires that we use the lowest cost provider and when they bid on bandwidth. So there's not a choice. When you have a variety of vendors, you go with the cheapest one.
Mr. Chairman, for those listening at home, the previous speaker, if she could first identify herself, and then the online
okay.
speaker, so that our clerks record that appropriately.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. So would you like me to repeat?
Let's continue with you, Linda, please.
Okay. This is Linda Thibodeau speaking, and through the chair to Senator Olson, the E-rate program reimbursement program requires competition. It requires that the lowest cost bandwidth be selected for each location. So, and I am also not aware that there is any monopoly or any particular vendor who has bought up all the bandwidth and owns it for the state.
Were you finished, Senator Olson?
Yes, sir.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my comments specifically said that the Alaska Railroad brought that to us on that. Collision improvements or prevention of collision improvements. I can't think of the word right now.
Powertrain safety.
Thank you. Positive train control. That's where the broadband width was purchased there. But I don't know how broadband width sells across the U.S., so I believe we're being told that individual carriers purchase broadband width from somewhere, and we're now going to purchase or we're going to provide payment for that purchase. So I'm wondering where they purchase their broadband width from, and if there's a difference between carriers and for Alaska.
You want to take that, Linda?
Through the chair to Senator Fairclough, there are different, I'm not aware of that, and so I really can't speak to it, but I can say that there are different pots of E-rate money, different pots of federal subsidies, and the Valerie can probably add to this. The federal E-rate subsidy for schools and libraries is different than, say, the subsidies for health or other entities. So the railroad and their business is kind of out of our purview.
Okay. Very good. Yes, Senator Bishop, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. DeVille, I just want to add a question here on the, is the Department of Education confident in their analysis here on one-third of the schools at less than 10 megabytes? Are you pretty comfortable with that assumption on these numbers that you calculated?
This is Linda Thibodeau through the chair to Senator Bishop. I believe Valerie Oliver is more qualified to answer that question. I can tell you that our process of contacting the school districts and finding out what they have in the way of bandwidth and what they have in the way of speed tests at their individual locations is information from last spring, could probably be updated. Bandwidth is a moving target, as we all know. Schools that buy more or less depending on what they can afford and what the commodity is selling for at the time. But I will ask Valerie to also chime in on that.
Okay. Thank you. Valerie, still online?
Yes, I'm here. This is Valerie Oliver. And this probably is, the information is slightly out of date in that this is the time period right now where many school districts are doing procurement for the next year for the purposes of E-rate. And some of them are looking for contracts and are out for contract right now with bandwidth growth. So while this percentage would not shrink, I believe that, while it would not grow, I should say, it probably is shrinking because as the demand is higher and online testing is, looming in front of us, we have lots of districts that are procuring right now for increased bandwidth. So I would think that this percentage that are under 10 megabits per second would be a dropping percentage rather than a rising percentage. We won't really know. They're in the contract phase right now. By probably the end of March, we should be able to know what contracts are signed and where they are right now. And contracts that they're signing right now are for services that will commence July 1, 2014.
Thank you.
I hope that answers it.
I believe it does. Thank you, Senator. Thank you for the question, Senator Bishop. Thank you, Ms. Oliver. Okay, additional questions for Ms. Thibodeau, Senator Hoffman, and welcome, Senator Kelly, to the finance meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the handout on the discount E-rate requested, what does the percentage mean, because it varies between school district from 48% up to 90%?
This is Valerie Oliver, if I may answer that. Each yes. district is awarded a discount on their services depending upon the poverty level in their local community. The E-rate program has a discount matrix that percentage is drawn from. And depending on your, if you were doing a free or reduced lunch program through National School Lunch Program, or you are doing surveys or perhaps are a provisional school, that is the data that is used to determine your poverty level in your school community. That poverty level then is applied to the discount matrix. So some locations, you might be on Alaska with a 60% poverty level, or you could be Kuspuk, which, with a much higher discount level, because that truly reflects the economic situation in your school district, in your local community.
Okay. Any additional questions?
And the other question that I have, what implications would the fact that we are setting the minimum at 10 megabytes per second have on the future when the speeds may increase quite rapidly, say in 10 years, and everyone is at 50, would this program go away, or how would that be affected?
You want Ms. Oliver to answer that?
As I read the fiscal note, it looks like the this bill would cover the non-discounted share district share of the bandwidth cost, regardless of where they are. It would elevate those that are under 10 megabits, but it also would cover the non-discounted share for those districts like the Anchorage School District or the Lower Kuskokwim School District that are approaching 100 megabits per connection. Their non-discounted share is going to grow as their bandwidth subscription grows, and so I don't see the way that this is written that that would go away, because they are always going to have a portion that they will be required to pay under the FCC's statute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Valerie, I just have a question or a follow-up. You stated that the local community will always be required to pay their share. Is that correct?
Correct.
But the local communities under this bill are asking the state to pick up the cost. Is that correct?
Well, the way that the statute is written in federal law, different states do things differently. Some states do pay the non-discounted share. Some states do not. A lot of states have a state network where they bring the broadband all the way down to the school site, and that is completely covered by the state. So there is no one way of doing it. But under this bill, the way I read it, it looks as though the districts are asking the state to pay their non-discounted portion, and that money that is then freed up for them could help pay for the infrastructure to best utilize this this broadband that's being availed to them.
Thank you, Valerie. Mr. Chair, could I continue? I'm not sure who should answer the question, but do we have a State of Alaska broadband width study? And maybe we still don't have the right person at the table to answer that.
Through the chair to Senator Fairclough, I believe the right person is not at the table to answer that. The governor's broadband task force, I believe, is what you're referring to, and we were not involved in that.
So then if I could ask a question regarding the fiscal note, how did we arrive? Did we use last year's actual numbers then to arrive at the numbers that we see on our fiscal note today?
Through the chair to Senator Fairclough. Valerie and I worked on this. We worked with the vendors last spring and the school districts to find what their costs were. As she was saying, they're in their time now of bidding for next year. And at that time, they're in their bidding process for the current year. So what we're looking at is a little bit lagging behind, but our process was to get their best estimates and to use those figures, divided out with one-third needing bandwidth upgrades to 10 megabits per second and two-thirds needing a 10% increase. So we did the math that way.
Mr. Chairman, I would just point out that we're building in a 10% cost increase that vendors can negotiate because the state will just pick it up. Based on line 12 and 13, the bill proposes to deposit or to transfer a responsibility of paying internet services. But then if you go over to the e-government document that we were provided, examples of eligible services are basic home services, which include local and long distance calling, leased data circuits, ISDN lines, dial-up internet connections and email. I'm not opposed to any of that. I'm just saying that that's out there and that this bill proposes to supplant state money for money that's coming in from maybe being transferred from the BSA itself. Maybe it's state money moving from one pot to the other. But there's a built-in increase that vendors could then use against the districts to perpetuate a cost increase and not really negotiate well. With that being said, I just would like to say to Senator Olson, I appreciate this being brought forward. I'm absolutely open to providing better internet service to communities that certainly have dial-up. I know that lots of people can't report to the state on time because They have a dial-up service that goes up and down, but I would like to see a little bit more information about the financial implications of the fiscal note and how we arrived at $22 million, you know, as far as in FY16. And I'd like to take a look at the governor's broadband study to see if we're investing, if this formula is actually getting to what we want to do based on distributing the assets, or if there are smaller communities that need more help that this formula might not be addressing in those individual communities. So we have a system. I'd just like to kick the tires.
Comment on that, Mr.
Yeah,
Chairman.
Please do so.
Certainly, as we look at the fiscal note that's out there, as we look at the e-schooling and e-education in general, internet is the wave of the future. Certainly, going to be something that's going to be a very important factor in the lifetime of our children and grandchildren that are out there. As we look at the bill here, this is more to go get the discussion on the table to see how we can provide not just for school districts that are having a hard time with internet, but also those school districts in the metropolitan areas like Mat-Su as well as Anchorage. And so one of the options that's also out there, instead of having the state go ahead and pick up the whole $22 million, say, for in FY16, is to cut it in half, where the state picks up 50% and the school district picks up the other 50%. So there are other options that are out there to make it affordable. My main thrust is to try and make it affordable to school districts and have it benefit the students that are in the end going to be the biggest beneficiaries.
Yeah, very good. No, I think this discussion is good. Obviously, we need to hear from the education commissioner or deputy commissioner and find out more about the study, find out how this does fit into the overall objective to try to get more long-distance learning. And I know, too, it's part of the, I think, the scholarship program was that some of these programs, 4 years English, math, et cetera, was going to be provided to those areas that don't through this method. So a lot more questions, but I think now we can at least find out what the program is, and we can solve it another day. I think, Senator Fairclough, did you have another comment? And then I'll go to Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just was wondering, if there was a way to negotiate, the idea has been floated that we can drive down administrative costs if we were to centralize insurance. And so it just begs the question, if we're going to pick up the cost as a state, is there any buying power that the state has to take the expense directly off of the school district's plates? Or is there a benefit to have that local entity negotiating with, you know, multiple carriers to keep that competition going versus the state just moving? I mean, when the state moves, you can put people out of business if they don't have a choice of other commerce somewhere else. But is there a way that we can negotiate terms that might be better by moving with the access differently? I just wanted Senator Olson to know what I was thinking. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Thibodeau, would it be possible to provide me, the chairman, to provide the committee with the one-third of the districts that are less than 10 megabytes? Is that a big leap to a lot of work for your department to provide us those districts that are less than 10 megabytes? I'd just like to see where they're at.
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, I believe we have that information. Valerie, is that true?
We have that. We don't have that information for July 1st, 2014 and going forward, but we have that information for right now.
And we can't provide that.
In other words, we do not know what they're currently negotiating contracts for that are being set in place, but we know where they are right now.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bishop. Okay, we do have some folks, various school districts that want to testify. Thank you, Ms. Thibodeau. Ms. Oliver, before I leave you, was there anything else that you wanted to testify on or comment on? I'll go to you first. How's that?
Okay.
Did we lose Ms. Oliver?
I'm so sorry. I'm just here to provide information and not really testify, but I do want to say that I am a resource for you if you need more information on this.
Great.
I'm happy to answer questions from any one of you. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us this morning. And we will have more questions as we go along. Okay, so off-net, we have Luke Fault, is it, with the Matsu?
Yes, okay. Senator Meyer, I'm here.
Okay, Luke, did you want to testify on Senate Bill 82?
Yes, just briefly.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Luke Fulp, and I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Business and Operations for the Matsu Borough School District. My testimony today is in support of Senate Bill 82, an act providing for public school funding for telecommunications and Internet services. And we're talking this morning. We feel it's fitting that the bill is being heard today, and probably no coincidence given that it's Digital Learning Day, as it's a recent proclamation by Governor Parnell. But here at Matsu Borough School District, we invest heavily in technology to ensure that our schools are well-connected. We provide online courses, tutorials, and lessons that serve to enrich activities that take place within the traditional classroom setting. Digital learning is an integral part of our curriculum. Our students master online research methods, coursework, and learn what it means to be a digital citizen so that they can be adequately prepared for a future where they'll be immersed in technology, both in higher education and the workplace. In recent years, the district has partnered with service providers to increase bandwidth and connectivity to our schools across the district and our area-wide network. With this infrastructure in place, our schools are more connected than ever before. However, with that increased connectivity come higher cost. In fiscal year 2014-2015 alone, this will be next school year, the Matsu Borough School District plans to contribute $600,000 to the local portion of E-rate eligible services. On behalf of the Matsu Borough School District, I thank you for considering SB 82 and for your overall commitment to providing technology in the classroom. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for your testimony this morning. Any questions? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to go next to Beryl. I believe we have both Peggy Cohen and Mary Sage with the North Slope District online.
Thank you. Yes, this is Peggy Cohen, but Mary Sage, school board member on the legislative committee, is going to speak first, and then I will speak. So thank you very much. Go ahead, Mary.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. The E-rate program currently pays for 60 to 90% of all Internet services in public schools.
Okay, hold on. I think, is this Mary Sage? Is that right?
Can you hear me?
Not too good. So, if you could.
Let's try this. Okay.
If you could, state your name.
The E-rate program currently pays for 60 to 90% of all Internet services in public schools, or approximately 55 million.
Hold on.
Can you hear me? Fine.
Hold on. Can you hear me? Okay, Mary, is this Mary?
Yes.
Okay, Mary, if you could start over, but put your name on the record and your affiliation, please.
Okay.
And then proceed.
Good morning, this is Mary Sage, North Slope Borough School District Board of Education member.
Great, thank you.
I'd like to talk about the proposed bill.
Yep,
perfect. The E-rate program currently pays for 60 to 90% of all Internet services in public schools, or approximately $55 million. Total statewide cost for Internet services in FY 2014 is about $69 million. This proposed legislation will provide state funding in FY 14 for approximately $13.8 million to school districts to offset the local cost of Internet services. Currently, one-third, or approximately 170 public schools out of 500, have less than 10 megabits per second of Internet service. 10 megabits is a really low bar. Beginning in FY 2015, this legislation will allow schools below 10 megabits per second to come up to that minimum level and receive state reimbursement. To put this in perspective, the Alaska Legislature and its staff have over 100 megabits per second available to them during the legislative session.
That's the end of Mary's comments. This is Peggy Cowan, Superintendent of Schools, I'll close the barrel of testimony. If you have any questions, you know, we're both here.
Okay.
Again, Peggy Cowan, for the record, superintendent of the schools for the North Slope Borough School District. We are speaking from Barrow. Chairman Meyer, members of the committees, thank you for considering this bill. Thank you, Senator Olson, for sponsoring it and bringing it to us. We, too, had a hard time hearing. It was breaking up earlier, so I hope we're not repeating information you already received. There's two aspects of this. One is to bring schools to a minimum 10 megabytes per second that don't have it, which would cost approximately $7.3 million in general funds. The other provision is to is to cap the state's exposure to a 10% increase over the prior year for internet services increases, so that the state will, you know, doesn't have an unlimited level of internet service, you know, to reimburse. As was pointed out by some previous speakers, other states provide utilities and services and free services free of charge to all schools, such as, you know, basic cable and some phone and internet services within reason. This would have the state share in the support with the federal government of these kind of services. Increasing broadband will assist schools with distance-delivered courses, as well as anticipated state online assessments, which we have recently been evaluated that that our school district would not be able to do the you know, an online assessment program with our current situation. So it's an equity issue with both program and things like access to the internet for online assessments. The E-rate is, was pointed out about federal sequestration, that it's not subject to it. It's there's been talk about adding funding to the Universal Service Fund because of things like online assessments that are beginning to be developed at the federal level. Though I heard earlier questions about bid processes, we have had four different vendors provide us with, we do a bid process that, as was pointed out, I think by Ms. Thibodeau, we are currently in the process of doing. We have received these competitive bids, and we are right now evaluating them against, you know, our criteria. We've had four different vendors that have provided phone and internet services in the past. We have, in this particular bid process, we have two bid packages. I appreciate the support of other districts around the state. When we were, this is obviously critical to rural, critical to those 170 schools that don't have, have internet below 10 megabytes. But urban school districts would also like, they are not able because of the cost to buy as much internet and bandwidth as is available in their communities. And this would be an asset to them. And was the idea was actually partially generated from conversations with urban superintendents at a meeting a number of years ago when we were all struggling with how to meet our students' needs through distance delivery, through, the 21st century technologies. Thank you again so much, and we'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cohen. Any questions from the committee at this time? Seeing none, thank you for joining us this morning.
Kind of buck. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move now to Petersburg. It looks like we have several the school board members there, as well as.
Good morning from Petersburg. It's not school board members. My name is Robert Thomason, Superintendent of Schools, Chairman Meyer, members of the Senate Finance Committee. Thanks for allowing this time for input regarding state support for broadband access funding. Petersburg School District is recognized as a state leader in digital learning and application of technology. We're very fortunate, much more so than some of our colleague districts, North Slope, for example, in that we have 25 megabits of bandwidth up and down at the moment. there's a significant cost to that. It's about $6,350 per month, of which 77% is currently reimbursed by E-rate. John Painter, Director of Instructional Technology, is also here with me, and I'd like him to just tell our story. You've heard a lot of numbers, but the story of a small district that is a leader in the district. So, with your permission, Chairman Meyer, turn it over to John Painter, and he will introduce himself for the record.
Okay, very good.
For the record, my name is John Painter. I'm the Director of Instructional Technology in Petersburg School District. As technology marches on, so does the need for technology support. As an integration specialist, I have the time to work with students and teachers and use technology to do what was done with a pencil in the past, not just done with that, but what we can do with technology is push the limits and do things that weren't possible, such as 3D printing, teleconferencing with educators around the world to bring specialized instruction. Today, modern teaching methods utilizing digital tools are revolutionizing education as we know it. Technology is a great equalizer in our society, and we see that every day here in Petersburg. Every student has the same access to technology regardless of race, family, income, or location. Delivering fast and more robust internet connections has implications on our students' learning. Our connectivity in rural Alaska has a direct impact on those learning outcomes. The education system and our nation's ability to prepare students will in this highly global workforce. If we don't act now, we'll risk losing our position as a global leader. Thank you. And for the record, this is Robert Thomason speaking again. Just want to let the committee know that Petersburg is blessed with the Alaska Society for Technology Education Student of the Year. P.K. Bunyai will be recognized at ASTE in about a week and a half or so, and he is of Cambodian descent, a Cambodian immigrant, and a real success story for both his family and for our school district. And with that, we'll entertain any questions the committee might have.
Okay. Very good. Was there anyone else there that wanted to testify? I show that there's some other folks with you, so I want to give everyone
we also have Rachel Etcher and Rick Dormer. They are here to testify on the HSGQE when that time comes.
What bill is that one?
That's 111.
111, yeah, okay, I'm with you. Okay, great. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go now to Cordova, Superintendent Teresa Keel.
Good morning, Chairman Meyer and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Teresa Keel, and I'm the Superintendent of Schools in Cordova School District. Thank you, Senator Olson, for sponsoring this bill. Cordova School District is a model for use of technology in education. We are a K-12 one-to-one device district. Every student in our district has daily access to an internet device, whether it's an iPad or a laptop. And from 7 through 12, our students have a 24-hour laptop that they use all year long. We are fortunate in Cordova to have a community that supports the pervasive use of technology in our district. They fund us to the cap yearly. Not all districts in Alaska are as fortunate as Cordova. Technology is, in my opinion, the great equalizer for kids in rural Alaska. The ability to provide online content and courses enables our kids to achieve the Alaska Performance Scholarship, to take dual credit courses, and have diversity in course and content opportunities that rural districts simply can't provide due to staffing limitations and broadband limitations. The cost of broadband is becoming more and more difficult to bear as school funding continues to stay flat. Providing a minimum of 10 megabit for bandwidth for every district will take a significant financial burden off of school districts and, most importantly, will give every district the ability to provide more choices for content and courses for students, which will provide more equity for quality education for all of Alaska students. Last year, Cordova School District spent over $14,000 for our local share in E-rate for 6 megabytes of broadband. We recently went through the E-rate bid process for our next contract. Our goal this year in our budget is to fund for 10 megabits or more. The cost for those 10 megabits in Cordova School District will be over $20,000. If the legislature is looking for ways to fund schools outside the formula, this is the one that will provide you the biggest bang for the buck. All districts need broadband, and for rural Alaska, it will provide students more opportunities for success. I encourage you to move this Senate Bill 82 forward and become advocates for this bill for the equity in access to quality education for all of the children of Alaska. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Well, any questions, Senator Dunleavy? Question?
No.
Okay. Senator Olson. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Gill, I was wondering, as the superintendent of Cordova, you've obviously been around the block a time or two. As we look at this bill here with a pretty significant amount of money with a fiscal note, what do you think in 10 years or 5 years, for that matter, with the advance of technology, that this will be outdated?
Well, I will tell you that in our own experience through the E-rate bid process, we had the opportunity to go into a contract with an internet service provider for anywhere from 2 to 3 to 5 years. We chose in Cordova to go with a 2-year contract because of the uncertainty of where the cost of bandwidth is going. We believe that cost is going to go down as competition increases. You know, 5 years ago when we did our E-rate contract, we had two vendors who went for the bid process, and only one of them was even remotely close to something we could afford. This year, we had 3 different vendors vying for our to provide our services, and the bids were very competitive. And we believe that competition is just going to increase over the next 5-10 years. So I believe the cost will be going down, but currently it's very prohibitive for school districts to be able to provide the amount of bandwidth necessary to keep up with the age of technology.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson, and thank you, Superintendent, for joining us today. Okay, was there anyone else who wanted to testify that maybe I didn't catch? Senate Bill 111?
Oh.
I think I have someone for the next bill. Okay. If there's no one else to testify, was there anyone here in Juneau? Okay. We'll go ahead and close the public testimony then. And I do see we have Morris here, so we'll go on to him next. So we'll close the public testimony. And Mr. Morris, or Senator Kelly, go ahead. Brief at ease, sure. Brief at ease. right. Senate Finance is coming back to order. At this time, I'd like to ask Mr. Morse with the Department of Education to join us. Mr. Morse, I know you were over in the Education Committee, but the introduction of this bill, Ms. Thibodeau did a good job, but there were some specific questions for the administration and how this fits into the broadband study that's going on and other programs that we have. So glad you're able to join us. So if you could put your name on the record, please, and then we'll proceed.
Les Morrison, the Deputy Commissioner, Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, and I'm here to answer any specific questions regarding the bill, and I'm thankful to hear that Ms. Thibodeau did a good job along with her staff on the fiscal note explanation.
Okay. Well, we do have several questions. Senator Fairclough, you want to start?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're trying to get in contact right now with the carriers throughout Alaska to see where they're buying their broadband with from, so we can understand that function. So that will take a day or two for us to get that information back into the office. But one, I'm wondering, has the task force broadband study been distributed to legislators? Is that available? And could someone come by my office at least to talk about that study so that we can see what information the administration has?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, the broadband task force, which I assume is what you're speaking of, worked out of the Department of Commerce, but we're happy to contact them and let them know of your interest in that. My understanding is that they did finalize their report, I thought earlier this month in a meeting, because one member of our department was in attendance at that meeting. So, again, my understanding is it's finalized, and I don't know if the publication has been distributed yet, but we'll work on that.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Commissioner of Education actually presented at a Senate Finance Subcommittee this summer and told us that he had a broadband study. So if that's the same one that you're referring to from Commerce, then that's fine. But the Commissioner of Education told our Finance Subcommittee that I thought Education was working on a needs assessment for our districts so that we could understand the implications of rolling out the governor's scholarship and other things. Do you know if there's something different? Or
through the chair, Senator Fairclough, now I better understand your question. Yes, there is a separate effort that the Department of Education has been looking into, and what we call that wasn't conducted by a task force, but it was just a technology readiness survey. We're still in the midst of doing that, but what this survey was primarily doing is looking at our schools, do they have the technology and tools to do an electronic assessment? But it does have a limitation and doesn't really speak to broadband, because it in part is looking at, does the equipment the school have, can they facilitate testing even if it wasn't using an internet connection? There's a system called local caching where you actually put what you need on a local server for testing, and then you don't have to depend on broadband, and that's part of the solution we're looking at, because broadband isn't currently available everywhere. So we're in the middle of that survey. We do hope to have some preliminary information for another committee next week, and I will make sure to make that preliminary information we pulled together available to you, and as we finalize that, make it available to the full committee.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe I asked specifically about broadband in a study, because what we were trying to determine was how we were going to deliver educational opportunities to rural Alaska, as well as anywhere that didn't have a highly qualified instructor in a particular area that a student might need. But I'll leave that one, and I'll wait to talk to the administration about that. In each I'll just ask this one other question. Right now, the E program or the E rate discount for, I want to try to use the terminology correctly, from the federal government that subsidizes or helps to support some of the internet connectivity and all the other allowable costs are distributed based on poverty rate. And so what I was trying to compare was, is that an equitable system in the state of Alaska to actually reach need? So while I absolutely support my municipality of Anchorage receiving $3 million based on distribution in this bill in round numbers, at least by the E-rate spreadsheets that we see here today, I don't know if that actually targets enough money for Anchorage or too much money for Anchorage based on poverty level and the federal guidelines for this particular program. So I'm wondering if you can speak to whether the criteria that were being provided for distribution of funds will actually meet the need of broadband, either excess or lack thereof, in smaller communities.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough. All that I could speak to is the distribution, which I think you already have, is really the way that it's distributed is based on poverty. And so I think under that definition, it's distributed in a fair process. But I don't know, it's more of a policy discussion regarding, does that meet the need and should it be distributed to a wider group or to a larger population than those meeting those poverty guidelines or those districts that qualify based on those poverty guidelines.
Additional questions, Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, I'll wait to see if we have a broadband width study so that we know what actual resources are needed in individual communities, because we have a larger issue than this bill. I support the intent of this bill. I support getting resources to schools that are trying to provide internet. But Senator Olson started to allude to it in that we have college campuses that are out there. And so are we going to stand up individual locations for purchasing power, or are we going to look at a community as a whole, look at their need, and if the state of Alaska is going to take on that investment for the people of Alaska, then is it best to let the school districts negotiate? Do we know their need? Or does the city have another need that we might want to try to align there because they may be coming to us for access, or does the college have a need? I'll just let it go.
Senator Dunleavy?
Just a brief comment. My understanding is there has been a task force that looked at broadband, and that it was not necessarily comprehensive. But I agree with the senator that, I applaud Senator Olson on this bill. But we just want to make sure that we're not adding pieces constantly to a system that we're not even sure what the system needs or what it's lacking. And again, that has nothing to do with the bill. It just raises that question again that came up this summer. And that is, you're right, I've had university people approach me and they said, if you're going to do a broadband audit, can you include us in it? So the whole idea would be, again, to look at the broadband and technological capabilities and or issues statewide, and then possibly come up with a plan to address those as a plan. But we did have that conversation, but I believe it was a task force. A task force was convened and did, I think it did come up with some findings, but it wasn't an audit.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Mr. Morris, I don't recall the program that the governor had alluded to, I think, in the State of the State speech, the digital learning or distance digital learning program, and how would this fit into that?
Senator Meyer, yes, the governor spoke to a digital teaching initiative, which is in the capital budget, and the idea behind the digital teaching initiative in a high-level summary, I guess, is to begin with some pilot program for a limited number of years, start with three sites where there would be some opportunity to use distance technology and see how it can work and where we can take some things in and help them be more successful in terms of delivering instruction via distance. The idea would be to work with three districts the first year, look at success, and then expand that to five during this pilot phase of that within the capital budget. The other piece of that is also involves supporting instructors, because delivering instruction via distance versus delivering instruction in a classroom really is different in terms of what a teacher needs to do to be prepared. So there's some components that support that. So as the capital budget rolls out in the hearings, beyond that, there'll be some detail around that, some greater detail, and the commissioner will likely want to be speaking to the committee regarding that.
Okay. I guess I'm trying to figure out if there's some common ground here between what we're trying to do and versus what you're requesting in the capital budget, but we can take that up during the capital budget hearing, I guess. Senator Olson?
Mr. Morris, is the administration in favor of this bill as it's written?
I think that I would speak to, through the chair, Senator Olson, what I would speak to in terms of the administration's perspective is that this is an important dialogue, and actually all this discussion around broadband is has a lot of points to it. There has been a task force looking specifically at broadband. That should probably be added to the discussion. So the issue around creating opportunity and connectedness for families is important. Whether it is this bill that would move forward, it's an important discussion that the legislature should have in terms of a policy conversation.
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue,
please.
When can we get advice as to what kind of changes you'd like to see, or the administration would like to see in the bill in order for it to be acceptable to them, including the fiscal note?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I guess in terms of the fiscal note, I think that we've provided the information regarding that is necessary. I missed that early part of the discussion. I apologize for that. But I don't know that we have any other advice regarding the fiscal note. Outside of that, I think that the administration's view really is around this is an important policy discussion that the legislature needs to have, and that the administration would certainly take a position as this moves along if it were passed. But it's an important dialogue, again, and a policy discussion at the legislative level.
Okay. Senator Kelly?
Well, I agree with your last statement there that this is an important policy discussion. Senator Olson, thanks for bringing this up, because we tend to incorporate these kinds of subjects in our day-to-day talking points. We believe in broadband for rural Alaska and digital learning so that we can make Alaska equal in education opportunities. And then when it comes to us, sometimes it kind of wakes you up because it's expensive, and I think it's going to be expensive, and I think this conversation is necessary, because I think ultimately we have to do this. I'm not sure if this is the exact vehicle, but we've probably all said we have to make digital learning available for rural Alaska so we can have equality across the state, and here we go. We're going down that path. It may look something slightly different. I don't know. There's some people I want to meet with that I wouldn't have met with had you not brought this bill up. These kinds of things, you can just kind of talk about them a long time until one day you got to deal with them, and now here we are dealing with it. Thanks, Senator Olson.
Okay. Yeah, and I think a question that came up earlier, I don't believe you were here. Currently, the local municipalities or school districts are picking up the cost. And so what this would do is shift the cost to the state. And, you know, we would just include that as part of our total package of education spending. But isn't there some synergies to having this all come through the state? I mean, do you get better buying power, better management of it? I don't know.
Chair Meyer, I'd actually have to defer to staff at the department, whether Linda Thibodeau might be able to answer that. There may be some advantages that I think they have spoke to, as I recall from last year, around when the state's involved in terms of maybe being able to negotiate something on behalf of multiple districts. But I think there are some unknowns in that in terms of the fiscal impact that would have, but we may be able to provide some more specifics regarding that.
Okay. Senator Faircliff?
Briefings.
Sure. Okay, Senate Finance is back in session. Actually, Senator Fairclough brought up has brought up some good questions. A lot of these questions can't be answered today at this committee. There's a lot of different studies going on in this area. There's things going on at the local level and that perhaps maybe should go on at the state level. A lot of unknowns. So what I would like to do with this particular bill, and the chairman is in agreement, is form a subcommittee to work with you, Mr. Morse, and try to get to some more details and nuts and bolts on how this bill or something similar to this bill could work. So Senator Olson has agreed to chair the subcommittee. Senator Fairclough and Senator Dunleavy will all be members of that committee, and we would hope that we could bring something back to the full committee within 30 days or somewhere in that area. Is that enough time?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Mr. Morse. And thank you for committee members agreeing to take on additional responsibility. So with that, let's set this bill aside, and we'll take a brief at ease before we move on to Senate Bill 111. So brief at ease. Senate Finance is back in order. Okay, at this particular time, we're waiting for Senator Stevens, who was here earlier, to come back to the committee to present Senate Bill 111. So while we wait for Senator Stevens, and it looks like he's here, let's go ahead and take up the SJR 9. We had a lot of discussion about this. I don't believe we need any more discussion. I personally, as the chairman, feel much more comfortable with moving this bill on. In the last 24 hours, we've had certainly a lot more email, phone calls, and comments. I think the binder is getting bigger, so maybe we'll have to go to a bigger size here pretty soon if we don't move this bill on. But the comments do seem to be pretty balanced, both. Feel very strongly both ways, so I, as the chairman, don't have any problems with moving this bill on to the floor, where Senator Dunleavy then will continue his efforts on getting this on the floors. Any other quick comments? Okay, Senator Kellogg.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate Finance Committee move SJR 9 version U, which is a constitutional amendment on education funding, from committee with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, bill moves from committee. Okay, with that, as members sign the recommendation sheet, Senator Stevens, would you like to join us, please? I know you were here earlier. Apologize. I know you've been bouncing around between the Education Committee and here, but we're glad to have you, Senator Stevens, and if you could introduce yourself and explain Senate Bill 111.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Stevens, Senator of District R, and with me is Tim Lampkin on my staff. This is Senate Bill 111, which would repeal the exit exam. It's pretty interesting, you know, it passed in 2001, and just as a side note, that was your first year in the House, Mr. Chairman, and it passed 40-0, so I think you probably voted for it, as did I. Senator Kelly was in the Senate and voted for it. So it was an issue that at the time seemed really important because we found that students were graduating without basic skills for jobs and going and careers and going on to college. So we thought as a part of the national sort of movement to have exit exams that it would be a good thing here in Alaska. It became effective in 2004, fully effective. So we've had 10 years of experience with the exit exam. And the truth of the matter is that very little was gained with the exit exam. No accountability measures are now in place that really make that exit exam obsolete. New standards, the Alaska state standards, along with the Common Core standards, having adopted the Alaska state or implemented the Alaska state standards, it really doesn't make sense anymore to compete to continue with this. Because the exit exam is not aligned to those state standards, those new state standards. It is a high stakes exam, and of course causes enormous anxiety among students and teachers and parents. When we passed it. I was new to the legislature, and it made sense to me that we were establishing a floor and that all children should have these certain abilities when they graduated. But what we found is that it became a ceiling, and kids began to think that I passed it in my sophomore year and I have nothing to worry about. I'm done with high school, and of course that's really not what we want, and that's not the case. It is very costly, $3 million annually. It takes 6 days out of the school year, 3 days each semester, so a lot of time is lost in the classroom. And finally, Mr. Chairman, there's just enormous support for repealing the exit exam from students, from parents, from school boards, from superintendents, from the State Board of Education, the Commissioner of Education, and of course the governor in his omnibus bill. So, Mr. Chairman, I think it's time to exit the exit exam. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. We do have a question. Thank you, Senator Stevens. And Senator Kelly, question.
Senator Stevens, question I have was the people who – do we have any idea how many people during this period of time had a certificate of participation? Do you have a number on that?
I don't. Tim, do you have any idea of that?
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, for the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. You could probably extrapolate that from the data that's in your test results part of the packet there, but for a specific number, I don't have that handy. You would have to defer to the department.
Well, one of the questions I had, and this bill, I don't think, envisions what we would do with those people who passed the or who did not pass and only got a certificate of participation. But but in my reading recently, I think one of the governor's recommendations was that he had a recommendation for them. And excuse me. I guess that answers my questions. I don't think you have it in this bill. I don't want to leave those people high and dry. I think the exit exam was a mistake. You're right, I did vote for it, and I think that summer I thought I just had more time to think about it, and I didn't like the whole idea. And one of the things I liked least about it is that we had these people with certificates of participation, and I thought about an Alaskan student that went to high school and maybe got the exact same education as a California student. So the Alaska student and the California student, they go off for their life and they end up in Kansas. They both end up interviewing before some person, and the guy from California has a high school diploma and the guy from Alaska has the certificate of participation, but they were exactly equal. And I thought we kind of hamstrung those folks. And as we go through this education process, I don't want to forget them. I want to say, only income free. You got a high school education in this state during that period of time. You got a high school education because we're changing the rules now. We should have never changed them in the first place. And my fundamental disagreement with the test that I hadn't articulated even to myself at that time was high school diploma should mean a high school diploma. That should mean the test. And I think we lost sight of that because we were so eager to address an ongoing problem in the state regarding education. And as I say, I guess your bill doesn't do that, but as we have the education discussions, I want to remember those folks.
Senator Kelly, it was a national movement, and we were sort of caught up in the excitement of it, and we thought, we've got a problem here, maybe this will help solve it, and in 10 years it really has not. One of the issues that I think is very important is to make sure that children in school today know that they're going to have to take that exit exam this year. I mean, those who are in school today will have to take that exit exam. This is far from being a done deal, even though it's in the governor's omnibus bill. It's in this bill, but there's a long way to conclusion on this. And students who are in school this year will have to take that exam. But it is an important point to realize that if students fail it, they have an opportunity to take it again and again. So there is the last line you'll see. June 30th is actually the close of it. So June 30th of 2017. So if people do fail the exam, they will have an opportunity to retake it, I think, six times before it's finally done. Should it pass?
Very good. Senator Denley.
Through the chair, I don't know if this question is appropriate for Senator Stevens or maybe the department, but
I'd say no. So.
Has there ever been a study, even just a look at how many employers over the years of the high school qualifying exam, how many of the employers asked to see whether a student, if in fact, did pass all three parts of it? And again, I don't know if you can answer it. If there's somebody,
you know, I can't answer that, Senator. Cannot answer it, but it's a very good question and one that would be nice for us to know. So I'd look to the department to try to respond to that.
Okay, save that one. Senator Denlevy. Additional questions? Senator Olson.
Senator Stevens, as we look at the effects of the high school exit qualifying exam, I mean, I never took it. I heard a lot of people that have taken it, but are you saying that it was totally ineffective or you didn't see any increase in the scores of the SAT or any other college entrance exams, realizing that these students were, if not stimulated, were held under the gun to go ahead and try and perform well? I find it hard to fathom that would not be a stimulus for some student out there that's obviously going to be an enterprising person in the future to try and better his scores.
Well, we can see some changes, and I'll ask Tim to go through those for you, but from my own experience, my youngest daughter took it her sophomore year, and thought it was sort of silly. So I think a lot of kids do see it as pretty much a waste of time. But Tim, would you explain some of those statistics?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, if you refer to your packet, there's data test results there that we got from the department. In grade 10, it's just from the full lifespan of the exit exam when the students were first held accountable in spring of 2004 to the last test results from spring of 2013. We went in reading I'm rounding up slightly, to 30% to 17% not proficient. Or on the flip side of that, 70% proficiency to 84% proficiency over that time span. In the category of writing, we went from 86% to 72% proficient. So we actually went down in writing scores. The biggest change was perhaps in mathematics when we went from 67% to 77%, a full 10% increase over the lifespan of the exit exam.
So, Senator, we did see some changes take place over the time, over 10 years.
Mr. Chairman, so with those numbers, you got a 10% increase in mathematics and a 7% increase in some of your other skills. Don't you see that as a positive?
Oh, absolutely. It's a positive for the districts. I mean, they've done what they should be doing. But the problem is that it doesn't really fit into the new standards that have been approved by the governor and the commissioner of education that are being established based on the Common Core standards. So it doesn't align with what now is really our goal for children in our districts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Olson. Additional questions? Senator Stevens, I obviously support this bill, and I think it's something that we should have done several years ago. And I think when we served on the Education Committee together, we tried several years ago. So do appreciate you bringing this forward. Also like a positive fiscal note. We need to see more of those. So.
Exactly.
And I would imagine this would save the school districts a substantial amount of money as well, because I know they spend a lot of time administering these tests, preparing the kids for the tests. Ultimately, whether we go to what the governor's recommending as far as a testing method or some other method, those costs might be offset. But
yeah, Mr. Chairman, the money saved as well as the time, putting kids back 6 days back in the classroom, I think that's a real positive thing. Your reference to the governor's bill, this is a part of the omnibus package that we are dealing with in education. The governor, there are several pieces of the omnibus bill that are going through the legislature, and I assume that would be the vehicle at some point, but if that should falter along the way, at least this bill is here, and we can see that this is the last year that we're wasting time and money on an exam that's no longer necessary.
Yes, I agree, Senator Stevens, that this will probably be part of the omnibus bill, but if it isn't, we still want this. This is an important enough issue. We'd want this to go as a standalone. Okay, very good. We have several people to testify, so if there's no additional questions for the sponsor, we'll go right to public testimony. Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Thank you.
We'll start with the Alaska Gateway School District in Tok, Todd Poge.
Yeah, good morning. Poge. Todd Poge, Superintendent of Alaska Gateway School District. Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can, sir. Thank you for joining us today. If you could put your name on the record and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, it's Todd Poge, Superintendent of Alaska Gateway School District. My seventh year as Superintendent of the School District. We're having a little problems hearing. It's pretty staticky, so thank you for the opportunity to comment today. The Alaska Gateway School District is located in the Tok area, encompassing 28,000 square miles, serving seven communities. Today it's 28 below.
Wow.
When the HSGQE became part of the requirement for a high school diploma, I was directly overseeing the instructional program at 11 rural schools. During this time, I strongly supported the SSGQE because this exit exam brought attention to a level of academic proficiency each student needed to attain in order to receive a high school diploma. This is most definitely an assessment the students take extremely seriously and put forth their best effort because of the consequences associated with not passing. At this time, the SHGQE is no longer relevant since the new academic standards have been redeveloped within the areas of math and language arts. This exam no longer aligns these more rigorous standards. AGSD supports the repeal of this version of the SHGQE. If another high-stakes assessment tool is to be developed, we support one that incorporates essential skills required for college and or intertwining workforce readiness skills such as work ease to eliminate the numerous exams accessed throughout the year as well as protect valuable classroom instructional time. We also support the development and implementation of an online assessment tool to increase testing efficiency so student answers are submitted and results received in a timelier manner for students, parents, and teachers to analyze. In closing, if there is to be a new high-stakes test, it does not have to be a requirement for graduation, but can be an inserted emblem on each student's diploma that attains a designated score indicating readiness for college classes, since universities could be involved in this process of developing the exam. Therefore, students with predetermined scores within content areas would not be required to take developmental university classes, which seems to be an issue. The exam could also designate levels of eligibility for Alaska Performance Scholarships. And for the record, we do support SB 82, also the broadband discounts for schools. Thank you for taking the time to hear from us in the field.
All right. Thank you for your testimony, Todd. I realized, too, I kind of skipped over the administration. I don't know if you had any comments on this or if you're available for questions. Okay, very good. Senator Dunleavy, you have a question?
Through the chair, I would like to ask the department a question.
Okay. Mr. Morse, if you could come up, please, and then we'll go back to public testimony after questions. Senator Dunleavy, go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, Deputy Commissioner, what kind of feedback have you gotten over the years in terms of the high school qualifying exam? Do colleges, post-secondary educator institutions, employers, do they look at that particular item?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, again for the record, Les Morse, Deputy Commissioner, Alaska Department of Education, Early Development. I actually think, for the most part, what employers look for is whether a student has a diploma or not a diploma. So in that regard, they've looked at it because you have to pass this requirement to get a diploma. The only true feedback I've really heard is from people at the university. I don't know, I'm not speaking for the university, but that this really isn't at the level that it provides them the kind of information to tell if a student has the kind of math skills that they need because of its minimum competency approach. So at the post-secondary level, I haven't received really positive feedback regarding it. And again, the only feedback really from employers is we do know many employers ask for and require a high school diploma.
Just one last follow-up, sure. Through the chair. But you don't get any feedback from employers that they're focusing on the high school qualifying exam as a crucial part of that overall portfolio of graduation?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. Additional questions for Deputy Commissioner? Okay, seeing that. Thank you, Mr. Morse. All right, we'll continue then with the public testimony. We'll go to Fairbanks, Ernie Manzi.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm speaking in support of the repeal of the high school qualifying exam. One of the points I'd like to make is not to get wrapped up in I've heard some people say, well, you know, doing away with this test does away with some type of an accountability aspect. And I don't think that's the case at all. I strongly support the other assessments that are being discussed, SAT, ACT. I'm a very strong supporter of work keys. I think that is a wonderful assessment and targets those students and those skills for students that possibly aren't going on to a four-year college but are more looking for technical colleges or careers in the trades and whatnot. So I think those are all valid assessments with that. Also, I'm speaking for myself, but in the past I did have the privilege of serving on the Governor's Council for on Special Education and Developmental Disabilities. And through my work there, we certainly saw those students who were on IEPs, the difficulties that having this qualifying exam as a requirement posed for them. And speaking as a parent of a child with special needs, a child that was on an IEP all through elementary, middle school, and most of high school, we really struggled with that. We were very fortunate that my son passed the writing exam on his last chance. We got the results back about 2 weeks before graduation. The assessment, the qualifying exam, didn't tell us anything we didn't already know and didn't tell us anything my son didn't already know, that he was a poor writer. How we addressed that was through his IEP, working with the staff at West Valley High School, who did a wonderful job, and that was the mechanism that got him through. So the fact that he would take the qualifying exam and we would see that he was not proficient in writing was already known. We knew that. He's still a poor writer. But right now he's going to the Career and Technical College here in Fairbanks and taking some classes that are strengthening his writing. So I just don't think that the qualifying exam in and of itself, with the barrier, and I'll use the term barrier that I put up for many students like my son, in terms of preventing them or making it more difficult to get a high school diploma. Also, just in listening to your discussion, I would certainly appreciate Senator Kelly's comments about, you know, what do we do with students that may have met all the other requirements for a diploma but yet didn't pass the qualifying exam and therefore didn't get a diploma. And is there a way to address those things? And also with following up with something that Senator Dunleavy said, my sense in having worked with high school students and now with students that are in a residential treatment center, what employers look for is they ask that question, do you have a high school diploma? That's what they're asking for. I've never heard in working with kids and working with them to get employment any questions about did you pass the qualifying exam. It's like, do you have a high school diploma? So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to testify.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. We are hearing the chimes, meaning that the floor session is going to be starting here in a few minutes, so I think we'll conclude the public testimony for today. Let's continue this tomorrow, as well as we'll be taking up Senator Kelly, I believe, will be taking up the supplemental budget. So we'll continue with the public testimony, finish that, and we'll hold this bill since it is part of the omnibus bill that's going around, and then we'll go right into the supplemental budget. So with that, if there's nothing else come before the committee, we're adjourned till tomorrow at 9:00.